Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When John McCain and I are sworn in, if we are so privileged to be elected to serve this country, we'll be ready. I'm ready.
But was she ready for Charles Gibson? And was he ready for her? David Hinckley in the Daily News today calls it the longest first date in history, this two-day series of interviews continuing today in Alaska. So you be the news editor. You be the pundit. Call us up and tell us what you think the headline should be on this longest first date in history. Did Palin leave you thinking that she is more qualified or less qualified to be president of the United States than you thought a day ago? And how do you think this longest first date in history will affect the presidential race? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You be the editor. You be the pundit. With us now is Susan Page, the USA Today, Washington Bureau Chief. USA Today, by the way, has an article today saying Palin has largely governed from the center in Alaska, according to a nonpartisan budget watcher up there, did take on big oil and resisted some opportunities to insert her religious agenda into Alaska state policy. So hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it's great to be with you.
And we'll play some Palin-Gibson clips, and we'll play some Obama and McCain at Columbia University. Here is Palin on why she accepted John McCain's invitation to be his running mate.
I answered him yes, because I have the confidence in that readiness and knowing that you can't blink. You have to be wired in a way of being so committed to the mission that we're on, reform of this country and victory in the war. You can't blink. So I didn't blink then, even when asked to run as his running mate.
So, Susan, that's the fearless, feisty Palin that many people have been impressed by on a personality level. And if you see the video, I thought she had body language to match the fearless, feisty words, even though she also looked awkward and uncomfortable at other times. But I want to actually replay the middle of that clip because it tells us something else. In classic Republican style, the McCain-Palin campaign has now boiled their message down to two key words.
In the mission that we're on, reform of this country and victory in the war.
So, Susan Page, reform and victory. It used to be experience and victory. Now it's reform and victory. Want to talk about that evolving message?
Well, reform is definitely the message that John McCain wanted to reinforce when he picked Sarah Palin. He certainly wasn't reinforcing his experience message. In fact, he was giving it up. And that is a trait I think they feel very good about making, that the idea that Sarah Palin's a reformer and independent, like John McCain, someone willing to stand up to his party, that is something that has rebounded really well with voters in the few weeks since he unveiled her name as his running mate.
They used to go so hard at Obama for being inexperienced and not ready, like Hillary Clinton had done. But I guess they decided that experience makes McCain sound old, makes him sound like a Washington insider, and makes it easier to align him with Bush. Plus, Palin makes experience less credible as a slogan, so now it's reform and victory.
Well, and also, if an electorate really wants change, experience isn't necessarily the strongest thing you can offer. I think that's certainly what Hillary Clinton found in the Democratic primary. She tried an experience argument against Obama, and she was not the person who got nominated in Denver. So I think there were several reasons they thought the experience card was not going to win this election for them. John McCain gambled in picking Sarah Palin, and the repercussions of that, I think, have surprised a lot of us by how much she is now defining. She's now driving the election coverage the last couple weeks.
By the way, before we go on to more Palin clips, now it's reform and victory for the Republicans. Do the Democrats have anything equivalent or that memorable? It's, of course, change we can believe in that we see on the signs, but I don't know that they ride that as much.
You know, I was on a conference call this morning for reporters with David Plouffe, who's Obama's campaign manager, and Rahm Emanuel and Dick Durbin, who are two of his closest advisors from Congress. And they were clear. Their clear message was, we're not going to get distracted by some of these attacks that have caused such enormous furor in the last couple of days, like lipstick on a pig. We're going to talk about the economy and change in the economy. Now, I'm not sure they've got two words like reform and victory, but they were relentlessly articulating a message that said we're going to focus on big issues in the economy, and we're going to present ourselves as the agents. We're going to present Obama as the agent of real change.
It's economy, 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 stupid, and let's see if they can actually break through and get some mass media coverage on that. All right, another Palin clip. It starts with Charles Gibson's question.
Have you ever met a foreign head of state?
I have not, and I think if you go back in history and if you ask that question of many vice presidents, they may have the same answer that I just gave you. But Charlie, again, we got to remember what the desire is in this nation at this time. It is for no more politics as usual and somebody's big fat resume maybe that shows decades and decades in that Washington establishment where, yeah, they've had opportunity to meet heads of state.
Susan, there's a lot I want to say about that, but go ahead.
Well, I would say that's a dangerous line, I think, for her to use because she could be describing John McCain. By describing someone who has a big resume, spent a lot of time in Washington. Only Joe Biden, of the four people on this ticket, only Joe Biden has spent more time in Washington than John McCain has. I'd also like to point out that she is inaccurate in saying that previous vice presidents had also not met with foreign leaders before they took office. That hasn't been true the last several vice presidents. The last vice president who took office and did not have experience in meeting foreign leaders was Spiro Agnew in 1969 when he took office.
And funny enough, Agnew had skyrocketed from a county executive to governor of Maryland to Nixon's vice president in this six-year span.
That's exactly right. They have very comparable levels of experience, although I'm sure the McCain people would argue it's not going to end up the same way as Spiro Agnew's experience ended up.
And when you go through those other names, as I guess you did and some of the fact-check websites have done since last night, Cheney, Gore, Quayle, H.W. Bush, Mondale, Nelson Rockefeller, Gerald Ford, that takes us back to Agnew. Going back even before that, certainly Hubert Humphrey would have met heads of state and Lyndon Johnson had, and I presume Nixon as a congressman, and Truman was a senator. So that goes back to the 1940s for what it's worth.
It does. And, last night I was trying to check even on whether Agnew had met with foreign leaders before he became vice president. And I conferred with no less authority than my husband, Carl Lubsdorf, who covered Agnew for the Associated Press, and went to a couple dozen countries with Agnew, foreign countries, when he was vice president. But he was not sure whether he had met with foreign leaders before taking office.
From our webpage, as we are inviting people to be the news editors and give us the headline here, and you be the pundit and tell us how you think this all played or is playing, because there's more on ABC tonight. Let's see, one post here. Hang on. I lost it. I just have to click through here. Here. It says, Charlie Gibson's interview with Sarah Palin would make a great opening sketch for the season premiere of Saturday Night Live. With her painful performance, Palin established her bona fides as a first-class featherweight politician. But then somebody else wrote, sad to say, this is an Obama supporter, but she writes, sad to say, although Palin's answers fell way short of what we should expect from a VP candidate, she did not make any gaffes that could be reproduced as sound bites to support the opposition. You agree with that?
I think that's largely true. I would say she survived this interview. There are times when she didn't look comfortable. When she was asked, for instance, about possible Israeli action against Iran, she said we shouldn't second-guess Israel. On the first follow-up, she said we shouldn't second-guess Israel. On the second follow-up, she said we shouldn't second-guess Israel. Someone who is really fluent with these issues would have had at least a different construction of an answer. On the other hand, I don't think there was a big gaffe that is easy to exploit. And it was her first interview. Maybe, often people get a little more at ease in dealing with these issues when they've done it for a while. She's pretty new to having to deal with issues that talk about Israeli action, what to do about Iran, what to do about Iraq. This is, largely new terrain for her.
Right. I'm not sure that any more experienced politicians would put it so differently about Israel they all try not to second-guess Israel. I asked Susan Rice, Obama's foreign policy advisor, at the Democratic convention whether there would be anything new with respect to Israeli-Palestinian policy, and she said the United States will stand four square behind Israel. So, you know, she probably didn't help or hurt herself with that. But another Palin clip. This is the Bush Doctrine sequence that's getting a lot of attention for her not knowing what it is and trying to squirm around it.
Do you agree with the Bush Doctrine?
In what respect, Charlie?
The Bush, well, what do you interpret it to be?
His worldview?
No, the Bush Doctrine, enunciated September 2002, before the Iraq War.
I believe that what President Bush has attempted to do is rid this world of Islamic extremism, terrorists who are hell-bent on destroying our nation. There have been blunders along the way, though. There have been mistakes made. And with new leadership, and that's the beauty of American elections, of course, and democracy, is with new leadership comes opportunity to do things better.
The Bush Doctrine, as I understand it, is that we have the right of anticipatory self-defense, that we have the right to a preemptive strike against any other country that we think is going to attack us. Do you agree with that?
Charlie, if there is legitimate and enough intelligence that tells us that a strike is imminent against American people, we have every right to defend our country.
So, Susan Page of USA Today, I want people to remember the very end of that. If there's enough credible intelligence to think that a strike is imminent. And I'll come back to that. I think you can look at that exchange three different ways. One, she doesn't know what the Bush Doctrine is. She's not qualified. Two, but I don't think many people care. And that sounded more like an SAT question than something really meaningful to test her on the short answer, what is the Bush Doctrine? But three, Charles Gibson failed to press the real question at the end of that answer because she said, we have the right to stop an imminent attack, which nobody would disagree with. But what made the Bush Doctrine so controversial is that it went beyond the old just war theory of preempting an imminent attack. No one was claiming Iraq posed an imminent threat. They only posed a speculative, potential, someday threat. But Bush said that was sufficient grounds for war after 9/11. So I actually thought Gibson missed the point as much as Palin there and failed to ask the real question.
Well, I think you should be running for vice president, Brian, because I think you are exactly right on all three points. I thought it was surprising that she wasn't that she didn't know what the Bush Doctrine was, which was pretty clear. I thought that was the closest thing to a gaffe, although she never acknowledged she didn't know it. She kind of steamrolled. Politicians learn to do. I agree that the important issue deals with that word imminent because no one, Obama, Biden, Bernie Sanders would not disagree that in the face of an imminent attack, we have a ability to respond. But the question is this idea of preemption of some future attack. I suspect the next time that she's asked about the Bush Doctrine, she'll have a smoother answer.
Let's take some phone calls. Here's Maritza in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Maritza.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so very much, ladies and gentlemen, for taking my call. I'm very, very concerned. I don't believe that the United States at this juncture can any longer afford to be as introspective as it is being. And I love this country as much as all of us. But we look at what is happening here. This morning, Lehman, Fannie, Freddie.
Don't forget WaMu, Washington Mutual. How many of our listeners have accounts there? We're going to be talking about that at the beginning of the next hour, by the way.
Yeah, sure. And thank you for that. I get all my brilliance from you guys.
I don't think. But when you say not, we can't be as introspective, what do you mean?
In other words, we cannot afford to concentrate solely on these socio-conservative issues, in my view. I'm very concerned that, for example, Nicolas Sarkozy is the one who is negotiating in Georgia instead of us. I'm very, very concerned with your wonderful coverage yesterday of CERN and the Hadron Collider. What do we have?
So you don't think that she has enough foreign policy experience because that's where you think we need to be really smart.
I have to admit, I'm an Obama person. And I believe that the that the entire ticket, the Republican ticket, is wrong viewing.
And Maritza, I'm going to leave it there and get some other voices on. Thank you very much. Keep calling us. Kenny in Garden City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kenny.
Hi, good morning, Brian. I think it's very refreshing that she didn't know about the Bush Doctrine, because this proves that they are not going to govern based on what Bush has done. So I think it was quite refreshing.
Okay, that's an interesting leap. So she, because she didn't know about it, she's not going to govern based on the Bush Doctrine.
Yeah. I mean, they are not going to follow whatever Bush has done.
Right. Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to John in Brooklyn. John, you're on WNYC.
I was listening to your discussion on the Bush Doctrine, and even my reaction at the time was she had it closer to right than Charlie Gibson. I mean, the idea that it's this narrow view of preemptive strikes, I think if you really look into it, it's a whole philosophy of governing the world. Now, she was hesitant in that she didn't want to call him on it, but her first response was, well, in respect to what? And I thought that was really taken out of, you know, a context. And
yeah.
I thought the editing, I was surprised last night. I watched it at 6:30, and then I watched it at 11:30, and I saw the same questions answered differently because of the editing.
The editing, I thought, I only saw the 6:30, but I thought the editing was very clunky. I guess they were editing to keep her only to the responsive part of the answer and cut out a lot of rhetoric and talking points and spin. But it came out very edited-looking, jumped from here to there, didn't you think?
At 11:30, she seemed much more relaxed and much more in tune with the... I was shocked. You know, I started going back and forth, TiVoing, you know.
Yeah.
I said, can this be that in such an important interview, that because they want the ratings all over the place, that they're going to edit it and send it out disjointedly? I think it gives a very different impression than sitting there and really speaking to the guy.
John, thank you. Yeah. And Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, it may be a little too generous to say that she had the that she was taking him on by using the word imminent and challenging his understanding of it, or when she said Bush Doctrine in what respect, that would certainly be a reasonable question for anybody to come back with, because the Bush Doctrine could be seen as a large idea and wanting to know what your interviewer is really asking, but she was also dancing around the fact that she didn't know what it was.
Yeah, she also used the word Charlie a lot, which I thought was an effort to seem relaxed and
all the pros do that.
With him. Yeah, I guess I
the
guess
number
they do.
Of
Brian,
times.
I guess they do.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh, the number of times that Hillary Clinton or Obama or anyone else came on the show and McCain and called me Brian like I was their cousin. Kevin in Long Valley, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
You were looking for a headline.
Go.
The headline is faulty wiring. That's a New York Times headline. I mean, it's not a New York Times headline, but it's a headline.
As Sarah Palin asked Charlie Gibson, in what respect?
I disagree from the get-go of what their whole idea is. It's like, number one, victory. You know, the military concept hasn't worked. It hasn't worked in 35 years. You don't gain world peace by dropping bombs on people. And here we have a guy who's running for the top job who, I give him all the credit in the world for being shot. He didn't get shot down. He crashed. That's another question. But his job was he was dropping bombs. He's very upset about the military guys who die and the military guys who are being taken prisoner and their service.
Yeah.
What about Barack Obama's kind of service where you serve the community instead of dropping bombs on people?
Kevin, thank you. And we're going to get to that, how community organizer, that whole thing came up at the Columbia Forum last night. Can we fact check, Kevin? Do you happen to know, Susan, whether McCain, not that it really matters, was shot down or crashed?
I don't know.
Livia in East Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm very proud of how Sarah did, and I thought Charlie was very prosecutorial, very condescending. Even the tone of his voice was different. And it's no friendly comments, that even at the beginning, comments about when she talked about her son going to war. And I think it's this, I got you kind of an attitude that has propelled Sarah to where she is today. So I think we need to calm down and ask questions that are reasonable so we learn more from, you know, Sarah.
Did you learn anything about her from watching the interview?
Well, I think she defended herself well. I honestly don't think she is, for example, where Hillary is at the moment, but I think she will be very soon. I think she has the right personality, and she said the right things, and I think we have to give everybody have to give her a chance.
Thank you for your call, Olivia. I appreciate it. What's your what do you have any thought as not just the Washington bureau chief of USA Today, but as a woman and woman journalist, about whether Gibson either was or came off patronizing, like Olivia says?
You know, I think he wears those reading glasses down on his nose, and he has a kind of professorial air. But, you know, the fact is he's had that with male candidates as well. And, in fact, he's been kind of spoofed on Saturday Night Live for that attitude. And I'm definitely tuning into Saturday Night Live this week to see what they do on that opening thing, which I can only assume will be off this interview. So I think that it could seem a little condescending, but I don't think it was sexist. I think it may be just his manner of doing interviews. And I got, as a journalist, as not only working for USA Today and a woman and all that, but as a journalist, I think it was a tough interview because you wanted to. He had a big responsibility to explore how much Sarah Palin knows about things, especially some of these foreign policy areas. So sometimes it's hard to do that without seeming prosecutorial. You know, there's a line there that is, I think, often difficult to walk.
Let's play what I thought was Palin's worst moment and Gibson's worst moment. Palin's first.
What insight into Russian actions, particularly in the last couple of weeks, does the proximity of the state give you?
They're our next-door neighbors, and you can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska.
All right. Ouch. What insights into Russia? You can actually see it from here if you stand on your tippy toes and look way over the rainbow. And for Gibson, he quotes her out of context, I think, and distorts what she prayed for regarding the war. We'll hear his question and a clip of her in church.
You said recently in your old church, our national leaders are sending U.S. soldiers on a task that is from God.
Pray for our military men and women who are striving to do what is right also for this country, that our leaders, our national leaders, are sending them out on a task that is from God.
So I thought she clearly said in the clip she was praying that the mission was from God, meaning she was praying that they're doing the right thing. She wasn't calling it a holy war.
Yeah.
Any reaction to either of those worst ups?
I think you're right that quote seems to be taken out of context. And she did respond by saying that and trying to explain what it was she meant. I also am not clear on what actually being able to see the tip of an island, the easternmost point of Russia, gives you insight. I grew up in Kansas, did not leave the state until I went to college. And when I went to Campfire Girl Camp, we could walk to the edge of the Kansas border and see Oklahoma, which we would do every summer, but frankly gave me no special insight into Oklahoma.
One other thing, kind of on her side, on the story that some news organizations are reporting that she threatened war with Russia in the interview, she said Georgia should be admitted to NATO and the U.S. would then be obligated by treaty to go to war if Russia invaded Georgia. But, I mean, and that's certainly something to be debated, but I think that's being over-reported because McCain and Obama, including Obama, have the same position, don't they?
Yeah. Yes, and if she actually correctly stated what the obligation would be if these countries
That's
come
right.
into NATO. So, but that was the headline that ABC sent out on its first alert about the interview, and it caused a lot of drama in the newsroom until we got a chance to see more completely what the interview had said.
Now, before you go, let me ask you about the lead on your USA Today website right now. I haven't seen the print edition to know if this is your lead story this morning. But on the website, right up top there, Palin governed from the center and took on big oil. article by your reporter Ken Delaney. And what's the Govern from the Center quote?
Well, it's the cover story on today's front page, and the quote is, she has Govern from the Center, says Rebecca Braun, author of the Alaska Budget Report, which I'm sure is on your nightstand for reading. The story is kind of a little surprising. You know, it sort of underscores how little we know about Sarah Palin and how we're trying to get a fuller picture of her. It's Ken Delanian has done some critical stories. We sent Ken Delanian to Alaska. He's done some stories that are critical of Sarah Palin, including one yesterday that talked about her town charging rape victims for rape exams. But when he tried to look at her record as governor, he found a kind of surprising picture where she at times crossed social conservatives and managed to do business with Democrats. So it's a slightly counterintuitive story, I think, and it's only 75 cents in today's USA Today.
and it pertains, maybe most importantly, to the national dialogue, to her resisting some opportunities to insert her religious agenda into Alaska policy.
Yeah, I think that would also surprise some people given the coverage that she sets. I think the issue was, I've got the paper in front of me now, was a bill that would have denied domestic partner benefits, which she vetoed on the grounds that it was unconstitutional.
That was pretty interesting. And she also, according to the article, rebuffed religious conservatives who wanted her to add two abortion restriction measures to a special legislative session on oil and gas policy, even though she supported the bill. So she kept them out of the agenda of a special session, mm-hmm. For what that's worth. But there it is. That's new information from USA Today. Susan Page is the Washington Bureau Chief. Thanks a lot for coming on with us and listening to these clips.
Brian, thanks so much.
With a lot more to come in a minute, we're going to listen to Obama and McCain from Columbia University last night and engage the question, should Columbia and other schools bring ROTC back onto campus? Stay with us.